It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. What a great weekend it was. And I don't get to go home to Albany very often, but it was a lot of fun. And saying goodbye to the neighborhood bar that I grew up, in quotes, going to, that was it was very, very sad. But I made a great last memory there. And we've had this talk before, but never in Champlain Valley Game Night. So give me a spot that you used to go to that no longer exists that you wish you could go back to one more time. For me, it's Andrea's Pub now. Rest in peace, Andrea's Pub, Half Moon, New York. That's the spot for me. That's what I said goodbye to this weekend. And Andrea's Pub was like a lot of other neighborhood bars that sometimes they last forever and sometimes they end up closing their doors. And you just never knew what was going to happen there. One night was free pool night. One night was bikers were there, and there was just hundreds of them in the parking lot grilling and drinking beer. Kind of place where you could see fights in the parking lot, places where people walked home. Whatever could happen at a neighborhood bar, I feel like I saw in just the 5 years that I was going to Andrea's Pub. So I went a lot. It was a double wide trailer on the side of the bar or on the side of the road. Within walking distance of my parents' house, I spent many, many days there, many nights there, just having a casual drink with friends. I told everybody about it. College friends came up. We didn't hit downtown Albany. We didn't hit Saratoga. We hit Andrea's Pub. So I got to have one last memory with Dad there on Friday. That was great. Went to my first ever baby shower on Saturday with Jess. That was interesting. That was open bar. I elected to not really utilize the open bar because it's not my party. I didn't feel appropriate, but other people did. So I have a feeling that the open bar made the baby shower more enjoyable for a lot of people. So that was, it was a fun weekend, but it's great to be back here in Burlington. Other things going on for us here station-wise that you need to know about. Thursday, we'll be out at RJ's. It's opening day for the Red Sox. They are taking on the Rays. We'll be there with our buddies from Sam Adams. They'll have specials. They'll have IPAs, New England IPAs. We'll give away Red Sox tickets as well. Speaking of Red Sox tickets, tomorrow we launch our 101.3 ESPN Red Sox ticket giveaway. So here's what's going to happen. I am telling you right now, 7:55 and 8:55 tomorrow. You want to listen, Golic and Wingo. 7:55 a.m., 8:55 a.m., you will hear the Golic and Wingo word of the day. So just say that tomorrow, 7:55 and 8:55, you hear that the Golic and Wingo word of the day is run. Well, what's going to happen is this. You remember that. You listen to the show. You remember the word of the day is run. And then we will tell you to call in during the huddle at one time in the 4 o'clock hour, one time in the 5 o'clock hour. And if you can be caller number 5 with that Golic and Wingo word of the day, you're going to win a pair of tickets to see the Red Sox here in April in 2018. We've got great tickets. In April, the Red Sox had their longest homestand of the year at 10 games. So we've got them for the Rays. We've got them for the Orioles, the Yankees as well, and in the first trip for Giancarlo Stanton to Fenway as a member of the Evil Empire. So it's a fun contest. You want to see the Sox. You want to see baseball. We want to send you there. So the Golic and Wingo word of the day tomorrow, 7:55 and 8:55. We'll also be doing trivia every Tuesday starting next week, 7:30 to 9:30 at the Burger Bar in Colchester across from Fannie Allen, half-price apps and beer specials. You can always get in. 802-655-6672. Josh in Burlington says the Blarney Stone and Last Chance both were in Burlington. I have heard of the Blarney Stone. I have not, I have never been there. I've only lived here a year and a half. So a lot of the places that you mention, chances are I never even have heard of. So I like learning pieces of history in the area also in some of these iconic places, because Andrea's Pub, it was a double wide trailer to most on the side of the road. To me, it was a place where I got to spend a lot of memorable nights with a lot of the most memorable people in my life. So it was a lot of fun. Also, the Chicken Bone Cafe in Burlington, that's also from Josh. I have heard of the Chicken Bone also. As for what's coming up today on the show, Mookie Betts, he sheds a little light on his contract situation with the Sox. An NFL trade, I think, makes a lot of sense on both sides. A major sports franchise that ought to be ashamed of itself. But first, this Giants and Odell Beckham Jr. situation, it's going to get ugly. This is not going to work out like it should. Somebody here, this is going to be a major power struggle right off the bat. On one corner, you have Odell Beckham Jr., who's a franchise-altering player. This is a guy that's been one of the most productive wide receivers in the NFL in his 4 years in the NFL. And when you include the injury, it's essentially 3+ years in the NFL. I mean, he's doing things that no one's ever done. Eli Manning's quarterback rating, passer rating, offensive efficiency are tenfold better with Beckham on the field than without him. He is a game changer, and he's still just 25 years old. He's one of the supreme talents in the NFL. He's in one side. He's got leverage, trust me. When you're that good, when you're that gifted, when you're that marketable, you have leverage. People will come to the stadium to see Odell Beckham Jr. But on the other hand, you have Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur. And in Gettleman's case in particular, new management, general manager, the GM, when he's in his first year, he's going to have the support of upper management, of the ownership. They're going to side with Gettleman because Gettleman got fired in Carolina for being too line in the sand in contract negotiations. And they said, after 3 years, we're done with you. He's in barely 3 months with the New York Giants. They're on his side to start. So you have player who's a generational talent with leverage in one corner, and you have a GM that's going to have ownership backing in the other corner who's known for being a hardline negotiator. That right there is setting this up for friction, and I don't think that it's going to get better. I don't see this being – someone here is going to walk away unhappy because let's be honest, what I think is, quote, right and what is, quote, fair, and in the business world of the NFL, you don't get right and you don't get fair. But what's fair is the two sides play out the season as it is. That's what's fair. Beckham goes into the season and he gets a chance to prove that, one, he's healthy, and two, he's not a malcontent. And then he's going to get his big money. And maybe he gets it from the Giants. Maybe he gets it somewhere else. But he gets a chance to reestablish his value and prove that he's not a distraction in the locker room. That is fair for Beckham. I know he's talking about holding out, but that's what's fair for him. What's fair for the Giants is they don't have to invest in him so early, and they get to see, one, is he healthy? Two, is he productive? And three, is he not a malcontent? So Beckham can hit his big payday if he does well like he thinks he will, and he might, and the Giants might walk away with nothing, and Beckham might walk away with all the money. But if Beckham isn't healthy or is a distraction, then the Giants are protected too. That's what's fair, but that's not what's going to happen. Odell Beckham Jr. wants the assurance. He wants the contract security. He wants the big money. He wants the Rod Tidwell, Jerry Maguire, show me the Quan. That's what he wants. Dave Gettleman is not wired that way. You talk about a staunch 50-plus-year-old who's been in the NFL for a long time who booted Josh Norman, a Pro Bowler, All-Pro, a marketable safety in the mold of Richard Sherman's loudmouthness. He's out of Carolina because Gettleman refused to play hardball or refused to play. You know, he played hardball. He refused to pony up. This is going to get ugly. Odell Beckham Jr.'s attitude right now doesn't warrant the money that he wants, whether it's his social media life and the, you know, alleged white substance, you know, in the video of him recently. His health doesn't warrant the big money at this point either, but he's talking about holding out. We get other perspectives on this. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, he was on the NFL Network today, and he talked about the Giants being open to listening to what other teams have to offer for Beckham. Here's Ian Rappaport, NFL Network today.
This was the owner, as you mentioned, standing up in front of cameras, mentioning the word Odell Beckham and using the word trade. Not saying they're shopping him. They have not shopped him, but obviously the Giants are willing to listen. And it's tough to do a deal for a player this good. The price has to be a lot. We rarely see really good players traded in their prime and then get a new contract. It's hard to functionally do it. And that's worth noting. But the Giants are very clearly saying, we talked about Odell's behavior before. It's been an issue. He knows the expectations. And yeah, it sounds like they are going to listen.
And you talk about being tired of talking about Beckham's behavior. Well, John Mara, owner of the Giants, he made that pretty clear.
I'm tired of answering questions about Odell's behavior and, you know, what the latest incident is. And I think he knows what we expect of him. And now it's up to him.
What's fair in this situation is Beckham and the Giants come together and they play out this year. And neither one of them has what they really want. Beckham would love to have money guaranteed now. He'd love to have security. Every player would. He wants that money now. He wants it for his past productivity on the field. The Giants want to say, look, we want you here, but we want to know that you're healthy, productive, and that you're willing to be a part of this locker room in a positive way moving forward. Neither one of them, they both want that. I'm not willing to give it to either one of them. Play out the year. If Beckham plays great, then he gets his money from New York and everybody's happy. Or he leaves New York and the Giants at least get the compensation pick out of him leaving in free agency. It's not what anyone wants, but that's what's fair. But it's not what's going to happen. We're going to end up with a staring contest that needs to get resolved soon. The NFL draft is coming. The NFL draft is exactly 1 month from tomorrow. If Beckham's going to be traded, it's going to be before them because Dave Gettleman's going to want to establish draft picks. The Giants have 6 draft picks, fewest in the NFL. If they trade Beckham, they can add 2-3 more depending, and some of them could be very high up. So this thing's going to get resolved sooner rather than later, but I don't think it's going to be pretty. Somebody here is going to have to cave. Beckham's going to have to cave and say, I won't hold out. Or Gettleman's going to have to cave and say, I'll break what I've done my entire career and be hardline negotiator, and I'll do it for you. And that's going to set a bad precedent for him in New York. This thing's going to get ugly before it gets better. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Again, 802-655-6672 if you want to get in. Speaking of more contracts and speaking of more contract situations for regional teams of interest, Mookie Betts shed some light on his contract right now. And Betts has 3 years left of arbitration. He won't be a free agent until after 2020. So he'll play at 2018, or he's got 2 years left of arbitration, rather. Play at 2018, 2019, and 2020. No, it is 3 years. So he's got 3 years left on his deal, 2 more times going through the arbitration process. And he said that he's not willing right now to talk about a contract extension. And he's 100% right. And if I'm a Red Sox fan, I'm disappointed. If I'm Red Sox ownership, I'm disappointed. But Mookie Betts is playing his leverage absolutely perfectly in this. So here, Mookie Betts went through arbitration this year, and he's making $10.5 million for this season. And that is the second highest total ever given out to a first-time arbitration guy. So $10.5 million. And then at 26, he gets to do it again. And at 27, he gets to do it one more time. So if he keeps playing on one-year deals, he made 10 and a half this year. What's he get next year? 14? And then 18? 15? And then 20? I mean, think about it like the franchise tag in the NFL. You get guaranteed money, you get a huge one-year deal, and you just get to, if you play well, you parlay that into a massive contract. Well, that's what Betts is doing. Betting on himself, going through arbitration, taking huge one-year raises at a time. He knows he's going to be on the Red Sox. And then he hits the free agent market at 28 years old. And look at what's going to happen in 2 off seasons from now. Money could be massive. $300 million, $400 million. I know this year was frozen on the free agent market, but there's really good players coming into free agency in the next year and subsequently the year after that also. Mookie Betts, the Red Sox could offer him a 7-year deal worth $160 million right now, and that would sound great, right? Of course it would. But he could play for 15 and 20 the next 2 years, and then he could get a 7-year deal for 210 just due to inflation and new market prices in 2 years. Mookie Betts is 100% right to not try to work on a contract extension now. I totally agree with him, and yeah, it stinks because the Red Sox would love to say we've got him for 7 years and not have to worry about what's going on contract-wise, but Betts is 100% right. He's using his leverage as well. Take the high guaranteed contract value for a year and then a second year. And then he goes and gets big money, and the Red Sox will have to pony up to keep him, and they're going to need to pony up to keep him because Pedroia is going to be gone. Price will probably be here, but he won't be a fan favorite. He'll be less of a fan favorite then than he is now at age 34 or 5. Betts is more impactful than Xander Bogaerts. He's going to be the face of the team. Pedroia is going to be on the way out and pushing 40. The Red Sox are going to have to keep him. He's going to be 28 years old. He's going to be in the prime of his career. He's going to be a career-long Red Sox to that point, a guy that they cultivated, developed. Mookie Betts has this thing in the palm of his hands. All he has to do is play well now and earn that big payday in 2 years. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I want to extend some congratulations out to UVM basketball star Trabell Haynes, the two-time America East Conference Player of the Year and one of the best players in program history. He was invited out to the Final Four this week, and he is going to be playing in the NABC, the National Association of Basketball Coaches, Senior All-Star Game. So it's only for seniors. Bell Haynes is going to go out to the Final Four. They're going to play on Friday at the Alamo Dome, which is where the Final Four is. So congratulations to Trabell Haynes. He's the first UVM player under John Becker to get to play in the Senior All-Star Game. And what does this do? Number one, it helps put Vermont out there nationally, but more importantly, individually for Trabell Haynes. It gets him in front of NBA scouts. And I don't know if Trabell Haynes has an NBA career in front of him. I'm not going to tell Trabell Haynes that he doesn't. But at this point in time, he is not a good enough outside shooter to say he is an NBA player. But he is a professional player. Whether that ends up in the G League, whether that ends up playing overseas, it gets him in front of scouts. And if he does impress, then you never know what happens come NBA draft time or free agent signing after the NBA draft. I'm not going to tell Trey that he can't get to the NBA. This just gets him in front of the right set of eyes for the next step in his career, and you know that he wants to play professionally. So congratulations to him. And also cool, this is cool. We're going to talk about this tomorrow in the huddle as well, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about it now. Trabell Haynes and Peyton Henson are going to be one half of a four-man team that the America East is sending to the Final Four also. So this is a cool initiative. It's not even done by the NCAA. But at the Final Four, it's about 8 miles away from the Final Four, they are having a 32-team tournament of only seniors who are graduating. So the minute their season's over, their college eligibility is done. So all of these guys playing are seniors, and they have no more college eligibility left. So Bell Haynes and Peyton Henson and then Tanner Leisner of New Hampshire and Jahad Thomas of UMass Lowell, they're going to represent the America East. Each conference is sending a team. It's a 3-on-3 tournament, and you get four players on a team, gives you one bench player, or one substitute, rather. So each conference is sending one. So you have an ACC team, and it could feature Grayson Allen, now the Duke's out, and a guy from North Carolina, and a guy from Florida State, Clemson, whatever. Each conference is sending a team. So there's 32 teams, and you're going to see, what's the magic of March Madness? Well, seeing the little guy beat the big guy. You could see the America East team beat the ACC team. And since all these players are now out of college, you know, out of eligibility, there's monetary prizes here. So $1,000 for every win, and the team that wins the whole tournament gets $50,000. And you split that among three players that are 22 years old, not all of which will have NBA careers. In fact, still most of which won't. So they're $13,000 after taxes or $13,000 a year before taxes for those guys. That's a good prize. It's good exposure, again, for the leagues, great for the players as they head towards the next phase of their life. They're all still in basketball shape because they just got done playing within the last month. Very cool that Trabell Haynes and Peyton Henson are going to be involved in that. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN. From a feel-good story to a story that should make you mad, one pro franchise should be ashamed at its workplace practices. We'll tell you that story next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. 5 minutes away from telling you about how the Red Sox need to have a big April if they want to achieve their goal of winning the American League East. But first, we have to get to this. The New Orleans Saints should be ashamed of themselves, and they should be disgusted with themselves. Bailey Davis is a former New Orleans Saints cheerleader, and she is no longer a New Orleans Saints cheerleader because she was fired for posting a picture on her private Instagram account of her in a one-piece bathing suit. And the Saints have a rule that cheerleaders cannot pose in, you know, in pose nude or semi-nude or in lingerie. And on her private Instagram account, that's, you know, she had a picture of her in a one-piece bathing suit. So your employer has the right to dictate how you act. I mean, I can't go and post certain things on my personal account and expect to get away with it. So that part, even though I think that that sounds egregious, I mean, people post pictures of themselves on vacation with their family, on vacation with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and some of those people are on beaches and wear bathing suits. So regardless, like, I don't agree with that, but if that's the rule, then at least you can make the case that your employer has a right to monitor what you do, you know, and put out on social media. And if you have a contract and you violate that, then you could justify that in some way. I disagree with it, but that's not really the point. She is suing, or she is taking the Saints to court over workplace discrimination and over improper workplace practices. And I think she is 100% right here. So not only was she fired for this, part of the reason why, she has to have a private Instagram account is because the NFL, the Saints have said, well, we don't want the cheerleaders fraternizing with the players. It's for your own protection also. Last I checked, women shouldn't have to hide their social media accounts because they should fear being preyed upon by men. If you think that players and cheerleaders fraternizing is a bad thing and you don't want that and that's going to open up a can of worms for your organization, you're probably right. But that needs to extend both ways. The rule for the Saints was the cheerleaders have to block all of the players. They cannot follow players on social media. They can't talk to players. Again, that's fine if that's how you want your organization to be, but it needs to be consistent. It's not only up to the women to not fraternize with men. Because, so what, you're telling me that then in the Saints' world, the men have free reign to try to follow and talk to women, and it's only the woman's job to hide themselves? That's not right. Then you throw in the fact, look, Bailey Davis is her name again. She's a cheerleader. You are limiting her opportunity to market herself. Players, the team is all about marketing their players. That's why they have highlights on their website. That's why their social media feed has gifts about their players. They want their players to get endorsements. That brings exposure and earning potential to their players and exposure and earning potential to their organization. That is seen as a good thing business practice-wise. The cheerleaders don't have that same right. If Bailey Davis, a Saints cheerleader, wants to, you know, if she can use her social media to parlay any kind of other work or more endorsement type deals. I don't care if it's for toothpaste, if it's a modeling thing. It doesn't matter what it is. If she had an opportunity to market herself and use social media in a way to market herself to make more money, then she should be allowed to do that. Saints players aren't told to be private. Saints players aren't told that they can't do certain things that would make their ability to make more money better. This is a bad situation New Orleans Saints. I am not a lawyer. I don't know how this case needs to be presented, but it certainly seems like there is a massive double standard here in how men and women in that organization are viewed. And for all the talks in this day and age about workplace conduct, then this seems like a problem for the NFL and for one of its teams the New Orleans Saints. Bailey Davis was fired for what I think is a poor rule. But again, you could at least make that justification. But beyond being fired, it's apparently only her job to make sure that fraternizing with the players doesn't happen. She needs to hide herself on social media for fear of being preyed upon by men in the organization. That sounds like it's a men problem also, not just the cheerleaders' jobs to have to hide themselves. And you're limiting the amount of money that cheerleaders can make. I had no idea what an NFL cheerleader makes until I read this story. Most of them are paid $9 and are paid minimum wage. You know, starting in Louisiana, when Bailey Davis started with the Saints, $7.25 an hour. You look at the time of game, you say, well, you're an hour beforehand, 3-hour game, a little bit after, you might be working 4.5 hours. And now you're going to go and limit their ability to do anything else on the side that they could potentially rein in because of using a social media account and having it be public. That is ridiculous by the New Orleans Saints. Champlain Valley Game Night. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. You can't win a baseball division in April. You can't win a baseball division in April, but you can certainly lose a division in April. 15-7 doesn't indicate you're going to win a division. 7-15 in the season's first month, you're crawling out of a hole that sometimes is just too hard to get out of. The Boston Red Sox have been given a gift in April, and they need to capitalize on it. The Red Sox have a very favorable schedule to start their season. They start the year with 6 road games, and on the surface you say, wow, 6 road games to start the year, that's tough. Well, 4 in Tampa, 2 in Miami. Team picked to finish last in the American League East. Team picked to probably be the worst in all of baseball. So you start the year with 6 road games, but you're doing it indoors in good weather as you build up your pitching staff. And in this case, you're playing with some call-ups. So you're going to lose Eduardo Rodriguez, Drew Pomeroy, and Stephen Wright's first turn through the rotation. Well, you get to go up against the Marlins' AAA lineup. You get to go up against Tampa's lineup that's sans Evan Longoria, Steven Souza, and other players that they've traded away. So you're playing the bottom of the league in the first 6 games. You need to capitalize on that. 4-2, 5-1 is a necessity. You can't stumble out of the gates here. You need to take advantage of every gift that you're given. And the ability to play the Rays and Marlins in the first 6 games of the year gives you a chance to start out 5-1. I think the Yankees are better than the Red Sox. I think the Yankees are better equipped for a deep run in October and are better equipped to win a American League East championship than the Red Sox are. But if the Sox can come out and start out 5-1 and just get some good momentum going forward, then you don't know what's going to happen. And then, so after those 6 road games, against the Patsies of baseball, they get their biggest homestand of the year. The Red Sox get a 10-game homestand in April, of which you'll see the Rays again, Patsy. Baltimore picked to finish 4th in that division, in my mind. You get the Rays and Baltimore for 7 of your 10 home games. So now we talk about 6 easy road games beginning of the year, and then 10 consecutive home games, 7 of which are very winnable against the Rays of Baltimore, 3 of which are against the Yankees. So if you're able to take 2 of 3 from them, you could get some real separation early in April. By mid-April, you could have some separation already with the Yankees. By your first 16 games of the year, you could be 12-4. You could be 12-4, 13-3. And that's where the Red Sox need to be. They need to take advantage of this April. They have been given a gift. And the reason why also they need to play so well at home in that 10 games is because right after that, they go and get a 9-game road trip. So you can't, if you hobble in to that 9-game road trip at 8-8 and just say, it's early, we'll get over it. Well, 9-game road trips in April aren't easy. So you need, in those first 16 games, you need to play very, very well and give yourself a chance in the division to gain some separation maybe on the Yankees, or at least know you're in a good position going into that first nine-game homestand. And in that nine-game homestand, I mean, you're going to see – I mean, who? You're going to see favorable – you're going to see Tampa and Oakland? I mean, in the first month of the season, the Red Sox are seeing Tampa multiple times, I think three different series, Baltimore, Miami, and Oakland. You have a 10-game homestand. You need to capitalize on that. Again, you can't win a division in April, but you can lose one. I don't see the Red Sox going out and going 8-16 in April, but 16-8, that would give you a really good start. At Champlain Valley Game Night again, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Breaking news out of the NFL, the Los Angeles Rams have signed Ndamukong Suh to a one-year, $14 million deal. And we talk about fast closing windows in the NFL. The Rams are trying to capitalize on the window from the minute that it opened. Because as soon as it comes, it's gone. The Falcons had a win, you know, have had a window where they think they could get to the Super Bowl and win it. They got to a Super Bowl. They didn't get back this year. We don't know now. The Giants were in the playoffs 2 years ago. Now, 3-13, possibly trading off one of their best players. Or at least that's a conversation point. The Seahawks had a six-year window where they were really good, made the playoffs five times in 6 years. That's a huge window in the NFL, and now it's over. And the Rams have said, our window has just opened. We are going to capitalize as much as we can. This is a team that has a young head coach in Sean McVay, has a quarterback that's making no money in Jared Goff, and they said, we are going to capitalize on the youth, the excitement, the enthusiasm, and the fact that Goff makes no money. They've got Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh now added to that defense. A defense that was already a fearsome pass rush. Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers. That team is loaded defensively. And, oh, by the way, Goff and Todd Gurley and Sean McVay working together on offense. That's pretty good, too. The Rams smell blood in the water. Arizona's done. Seattle is not done, but they're not what they were 3 years ago. They can still win games. They might be 9-7 again. They might be 10-6 and in the mix for a wild card. But as good as that NFC is, I don't know that. And if you beat them twice in the division, then forget about them sneaking in the division. And they know that Jimmy Garoppolo is coming. The 49ers are not ready to overtake the Rams yet, but they are coming with Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo. The Rams aren't waiting. Kudos to them. You have such a small window, and the Rams are going for it, and they're going to be very dangerous in 2018. Champlain Valley Game Night, when we come back, I don't know that the Giants would accept this deal, but I know the first team that should be calling New York trying to acquire Odell Beckham Jr. I've got the trade they should propose next right here on 101.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night. Final segment right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. You can always get in 802-655-6672. Well, the Giants said nobody is untouchable in trade talks. The Giants have also said they aren't shopping Odell Beckham Jr., but I'm telling you right now that the Cleveland Browns should call Dave Gettleman. They should call the New York Giants. And I've seen a lot of variation on if the Browns were to offer, what should they offer and what should the Giants accept. I've seen some people who have said that Beckham's value is 2 first-round picks. I've seen some value that says if Cleveland offered the number 4 pick in the draft for Beckham straight up, that the Giants should do it. I've seen other people that say his value is not what we think it is. The Cleveland Browns have 5 picks in the first 2 rounds of this draft. The New York Giants have the fewest draft picks in the entire draft. The Giants have 6 in the whole draft. The Browns have 5 in the first 2 rounds. The Browns have the draft capital to make a deal for Odell Beckham Jr. work. Here's what the Browns should offer. The Browns should offer the number 33 pick in the draft. That is the first pick of the second round. and they should offer pick number 117, which is the first pick of the fourth round. And for me, this deal on Cleveland's side is 100% what I want. Of course, it's what I want because I'm offering it. On the Giants' side, it's something you would need to strongly consider. Cleveland's 33rd overall pick is the first pick of the second round. It's an impact player still. The Giants also have pick 34, so they could get 33 and 34, get them back-to-back, and then they go get the first pick of the fourth round also, and they pick first in the fourth round and second in the fourth round also because they finished second to last in the NFL. 802-655-6672, get on the text line if you have comments on, do you like my offer? Do you think the Giants should listen to that offer? Do you think the Giants should have a much higher value on Beckham? Why does Beckham make sense in Cleveland? Let's look at the logistics. So number one, the Browns went 0-16 last year. They need good players. That's first and foremost. They also have made a number of moves this season that show that they're serious about turning their team around and giving their fan base something to be not even proud of at this point, but just excited about. And they acquired Jarvis Landry from the Miami Dolphins. Who's Odell Beckham Jr.'s best friend? Jarvis Landry. They played together at LSU. They are best friends. The wide receivers coach for the Cleveland Browns is the former wide receivers coach for the New York Giants for the last 2 years, where he worked with Odell Beckham. Before that, he worked at LSU, where he worked with Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. Logistically, Cleveland wanting Beckham makes sense. They also have the most cap space in the NFL behind the Jets. Still, with all the moves they've made, they have the second most cap space in the NFL behind the New York Jets. You can give Beckham that big money. You can give Beckham the big money that he wants. And Cleveland can still take the quarterback number one overall. And Sam Darnold's not going to make a lot of money for the life of Beckham's contract. The first 3-4 years of Darnold's deal wouldn't make a lot of money. So Beckham can make a ton of money. Tyrod Taylor's making $10 million this year. He's gone after this season. So you don't have to worry about him taking a big piece of that money. So you've got a team that can afford to pay him in a city that wants to win, in a city that needs stars, in a franchise that needs life back into it. Odell Beckham Jr. gives all of that. And if you're the Browns, you still, in my proposal, keep pick one, pick four, and you still end up with four total picks in the first round. I know what Giant fans are thinking. Now, you can say it to me on the Town Fair Tire text line. They're saying, Brady, Odell Beckham Jr. is an all-pro player. He's a Pro Bowl player. He's a game changer. Don't give me a second and a fourth for him. Well, let's look at the going rate in trades right now. Marcus Peters, all-pro, Pro Bowler. Bit of a malcontent at times. Bit of a distraction on the field at times. Not a ton. Good in the community from all I know. But at times has had issues. Remember against the New York Jets last year? Ran off. We thought he was ejected. He ran off the field, was taking off his shoes or whatever, ran back into the locker room, and they had to go and find him and tell him he wasn't ejected. He's had some issues on the field. Not probably as many as Beckham, but some. He got traded to the Rams for a second and a fourth. Okay, a second and a fourth. Lower seconds and fourths than the Browns could offer. The Browns have the best set of draft picks that the Giants could acquire. And I have said this repeatedly. The Giants, you build and rebuild through the NFL draft, and you need to hit, and you need to hit big. And I've used this example before. Look at Jacksonville's defense, which was the best in the NFL last year. Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey. Those guys are through the draft. There are others, but then you go and supplement in free agency with A.J. Boye, Malik Jackson. That's how you build your team. You build it through the draft. You supplement in free agency. The Giants only have 6 picks right now in the NFL draft. And you know what? They need to hit on 5 or 5 of 6 or 6 of 6 to have a transformative draft class that gives them a chance to win consistently. Signing Janoris Jenkins, Damon Harrison, Olivia Vernon, and getting JPP back 2 years ago when they made the playoffs in Ben McAdoo's first year, that gave them a chance to win that year. A transformative draft class gives them a chance to win for an extended period of time. We talked about the window that the Seattle Seahawks had for 6 years. That wasn't because of free agency. That was because of a transformative period of draft classes. Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Doug Baldwin, all of them draft. That's how your window stays open. When you get young, cheap, controllable players that you can keep for a long time, and then you can afford to go spend in free agency because your young core isn't making a ton of money yet. It's about winning with great draft classes that are inexpensive. And the Giants have six picks. They're putting themselves, if they only go into this draft with six picks, they are putting themselves at a real disadvantage. Again, it would be very hard to trade Odell Beckham Jr. I want this to work out. I want Beckham back in New York. I want him to be part of the solution for the Giants moving forward. I want him to say he'll go to training camp and say he'll be a mentor and then deliver on the field and get paid. I want that. But I don't see that happening right now. And if it's not going to happen, then Dave Gettleman needs to be realistic and listen to offers. And the Cleveland Browns offering up 33 and 117, that's a realistic offer for a guy who's in a contract year that you might see A, hold out, and B, walk at the end of the year. You very well could play power games with Beckham and get nothing for him, where he doesn't play or he plays for 1 year and he says, I don't like the way this was handled, I'm out. And you get, you know, a third round compensation pick for him. So if the writing is on the wall, then I would be very interested in listening to Cleveland if they offered a second and a fourth. It lines up well for Beckham. Star franchise, needs star power. His best friend plays there. His old receivers coach at two spots plays there. And they've got the second most cap room in the NFL. And they can still take their quarterback of the future and still go and get an elite player at number four also. If I'm the Cleveland Browns, I am calling Dave Gettleman. And if I'm Gettleman, I may have to counter a little bit, but I'm listening, and I'm listening strongly. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. All right, that does it for us. An exciting week. Opening day is Thursday. Remember, we are live at RJ's that night. We are watching, thanks to our friends over at Sam Adams. Coming up tonight over on 960 The Zone, it's the Celtics at the Phoenix Suns. Devin Booker not going to play for Phoenix, so the Suns are terrible. So without their best scorer, who has any idea how that one's going to go? The Celtics are so beat up. Terry Rozier's got double figures in his last 22 games. Markelle Fultz, the number one pick in the draft, is going to play again tonight for the Sixers. We're looking forward to seeing that as well. I'll be watching on NBA League Pass. We're back tomorrow at 4 with the Huddle. 6 for Champlain Valley Game Night. 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow morning on Golic and Wingo.
Can you hear that? Less than a month.